happened? What happened?
What's your name?
Shit. If there ever was a time, it would be now. That's all I'm saying. If there ever was a time to get on your feet, take it to the street. Cause you're the one that's getting played right now by the game they're playing. Come on, meet me down at the Cardi Park and say, oh, where are the...
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. You're listening at cprmetro.org or at our archives at cindysheehansoapbox.com. Our guest today is veteran journalist Chris Hedges, who has authored numerous books, and he blogs at Truthdig. He is well-known in the Soapbox family, and we are bringing him back to talk about his lawsuit against Obama and Leon Panetta. Without further ado, we welcome Chris. Chris, welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for being on again. It's nice to have you back on. And recently you have made some news by filing a lawsuit against President Obama and the Secretary of Defense, Leon Panetta. Can you tell my listeners about that?
Well, this was over the National Defense Authorization Act that mm-hmm. President Obama signed on December 31st, and it was... embedded in a defense appropriation bill, and it essentially overturns about 200 years of domestic law by allowing the military to carry out policing on American soil.
Mm-hmm.
It has some very disturbing features, not least of which is that those who are defined as terrorists, as substantially supporting terrorists, as substantially supporting something that is nebulously called associated forces with terrorism, can be snatched up by the military, denied due process, and in the language of the legislation, held until the end of hostilities, whenever that is, in Guantanamo-like conditions. So we had a kind of radical interpretation of the 2001 Authorization to Use Military Force Act by figures like John Yoo and the Bush White House. And through their interpretation, they denied Jose Padilla, who was allegedly one of the hijackers that didn't make it on a plane. They held him for 3.5 years in a military brig, finally transferred him to a civilian court after that was legally challenged all the way up to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court never ruled on it, ruling that because he'd been transferred, it was moot. It was that 2001 act interpreted by the Obama White House that allowed them, or in their eyes, permitted them to serve as judge, jury, and executioner for the cleric Anwar al-Awlaki, again a U.S. citizen who was killed in a drone strike in Yemen.
Right.
So what this does is just essentially codify this radical interpretation. Brings the military into policing duties on domestic soil, makes it official that through the executive branch, American citizens can be stripped of due process. It's a pretty catastrophic assault on basic civil liberties, and we've already endured a tremendous assault. So it's pretty major. And because of my kind of peculiar background, especially as the Middle East bureau chief of the New York Times, I was in close contact with both individuals and groups that are defined by the U.S. State Department as either terrorists or terrorist organizations, including the leaders of Hamas, the PKK in southeastern Turkey, Islamic Jihad. And so they felt that I was the lawyers who brought the case, and Southern District Court felt that I was a credible plaintiff.
And what does the lawsuit, what are you attempting to do with it? Are you attempting to have the law declared unconstitutional?
We're not asking for any monetary damages. The only mm-hmm. thing we're asking is that the law be reversed. If we are granted a hearing, we don't know yet, we will file, or they will file, an injunction. And ask that the law be held in abeyance until there's a legal ruling on whether or not it is constitutional.
And so what is the status of the case right now?
Well, it's been filed to the Southern District Court of New York, And the reason it was filed there is because some of those judges have been open to hearing civil liberty cases. That's where the ACLU lawsuit challenging the FISA Reform Act was filed and is being heard. And so now we're waiting to hear which judge has it. And if that judge has a record of being open to these issues, I think they'll ask for litigation pretty quickly.
And talk a little bit about, Obama signed this into law on New Year's Eve, right? And there's been, a lot of things like that have happened where horrible, unrelated things have been attached to defense appropriations bills, and they've been passed. But Obama actually added a signing statement to this law about that NDAA provision. What are your comments about that?
Well, the signing statement, which said that it would not be used against American citizens, has no validity. First of all, when the original piece of legislation was written, it did not include American citizens. American citizens were included in the final draft. The Obama White House was arguing back and forth with Carl Levin's office. Levin was one of the co-sponsors with McCain, not over the stripping of American citizens of due process, but over who would decide who was exempt and who could be stripped of due process. And the Obama White House wanted that to be solely an executive decision, and they won that point. That was the dispute with Levin's office. Now, Dianne Feinstein wrote or proposed that within the legislation there be a clause exempting U.S. citizens from this kind of treatment, and that was rejected by both the Obama White House and the Democratic Party. So I think we have to look at what the law can do and what it's designed to do. The signing statements are no protection at all. This is a piece of legislation that permits the executive branch to treat American citizens as enemy combatants or terrorists and strip them of all legal protection. That's what the bill does.
Well, there was much left-wing criticism, if you can call what we have in this country as passing for the left, of signing statements when George Bush did them. And, of course, what have you received in way of feedback for this? Is there a lot of support from, Democratic, organizations that are affiliated with it for your lawsuit? Have you had criticism from people? Are you surprised at the lack of outrage over the signing from people on the so-called left?
No, only because I long ago gave up on the professional liberal class in this country and the Democratic Party. This was a bipartisan effort. There were no disputes between the Republicans and the Democrats over this issue. And their mouthpieces, whether on MSNBC or anywhere else, didn't bring it up. The MSNBC essentially functions the same way Fox News functions for the lunatic fringe of the Republican right. They're just cheerleaders for the Democratic Party and the Obama White House. But I think it's just deception of another kind. What was interesting is when I wrote it up saying that I would do it, the website I write for, Truthdig, got more hits than it ever had gotten in its history. In fact, the site crashed. So it's certainly on the internet got quite a huge response. And then media outlets like Democracy Now!, Amy had us in and covered it. But within the mainstream press, it's largely been ignored.
I think that there would be, over the Alaki killing, over not just Anwar Alaki, who was executed by President Obama without due process, but you know, his son and his son's dinner partners were subsequently also killed by. And, you know, there's the lack of outrage. To me, it would be if McCain were president and he did the same thing, or if Bush did these things, I think the outcry would be immense over, rightly, and immense over these issues. And it's just very distressing that, you know, Obama seems to be have been elected to further the oppressions here at home and the wars of aggression. You said that in one of your columns, you wrote the you believe that the real purpose of the bill is to thwart internal domestic movements that threaten the corporate state. Can you, you know, expand on that a little bit?
Well, I don't know. I don't claim to know what the motive of the bill is. That's a supposition. But I do know what the bill can do. And given the criteria by which people can already be investigated, you know, if you're missing a few fingers on your hand, if you have weatherproof ammunition in your house, if you have stockpiled more than 7 days of food, which would include most of my relatives in rural Maine, you can be investigated by internal our internal security state as a possibly a terrorist. Now, it's a very short step just to adding some of the obstructionist tactics of the Occupy movement to that list. And I think that ultimately, I mean, the elite knows that things are going to get worse. They know the economy is in a kind of tailspin from which it will not recover. They expect further unrest. I think finally, in the end, they don't trust the police to protect them, and they want to be able to call in the army, and this legislation permits them to do it.
Well, how is it different from the way that the army has already been used and the police state being at protests? Like, I was at the G20 protest in Pittsburgh, and the army and the police state from all over the country were already called out. What's the difference between what was the potential then and what's the potential now?
Well, and you're right, and I was also at the G20 at Pittsburgh, and they militarized the whole center of Pittsburgh, brought back a National Guard battalion from Iraq in full combat gear, set up checkpoints like it was downtown Baghdad. That's exactly right. The difference is that now the military acts not just as a blunt force for protection, but as an internal policing agent, so that it is military. The military can arrest you. The military can take you and hold you in a military brig and deny you access to a lawyer and hold you indefinitely. That's the difference. That it expands the power of the military to act as a policing agent. That's a huge step backwards for, you know, what's left of our anemic democracy.
And, you know, speaking of an anemic democracy, you know, we travel and work in a rarefied atmosphere where our colleagues, our comrades, we know about this. We care about this. This frightens us because potentially with our work as being anti-empire, it could apply to us. How do we get the average American who pepper sprays somebody over a sale at Walmart so they can get their merchandise? How can we get the average person to care about this? How do we reach out to them?
Well, I think the Occupy movement is comprised of average Americans, and I think that increasing number of Americans are awakening to the system that we live in, much of that coming about through the economic distress that's being visited now on tens of millions of Americans. 7 million people foreclosed from their homes between 2008-2010, with another 2 million people estimated to have lost their homes last year. You know, figures vary, but certainly over 50 million people now living in poverty. million bankruptcies a year because people can't pay their medical bills. I mean, the assault is just becoming too large to ignore. And I think that was reflected in the widespread popular support that these Occupy encampments had, cutting across the political spectrum. System of power is very good in terms of disseminating tawdry forms of entertainment to drain people's emotional energy and intellect. And I think that that has been very effective in the process of disempowerment. But things are just becoming too severe for people to pretend. And I think that's what we're seeing the state prepare for. The corporations only know one word, which is more. They know no limits. There are no impediments. There is no way to stop them at this point from reconfiguring American society into a form of neo-feudalism. And their response is to give themselves more power through the security and surveillance state to keep us in check. So I think, Huxley wrote about, in his dystopia, people were seduced into a kind of hedonism and self-absorption, and Orwell's dystopia was much more the Iron Fist. And I think what mm-hmm. we've gone through is Huxley, and what we're about to go through is Orwell.
And what could be our response to
civil disobedience?
Like that?
Civil disobedience is the only weapon we have left. That's it. I mean, that's why I've been arrested. It's why you've been arrested. It's why Wendell Berry has been arrested. It's why Bill McKibben's been arrested. Cornel West has been arrested, and hundreds of courageous, nonviolent Occupy protesters, including 700 on the Brooklyn Bridge, have been arrested. That we don't have any other weapon to respond with.
And the image that people see now, especially with the Democratic politicians in Oakland and elsewhere, the suppression and of the movement has been pretty violently responded to by the police state, and I think that's designed to frighten people away from doing nonviolent civil disobedience.
Yeah,
because the corporate state will say it was the protesters, but we both know it's the police that come there to foment the riots. And so the average American who turns on the news maybe 10 minutes a day, they see these protests and, they're thinking, well, I'm not going to go out there. Those protesters look pretty dangerous.
Yeah, of course. It's, they want to make it as intimidating and as frightening as possible to keep everybody passive. And fear is a powerful weapon. All totalitarian societies are fear-based societies. You fear the consequences more than you fear the economic and political degradation that's happening around you, and so you don't respond. But history has shown that by not responding, things always get worse. Very much so. I mean, there were clear attempts at provocation against the Wall Street protesters, including that first night when they pepper sprayed those women. I mean, I think the police want a kind of angry and violent response because they know how to speak that language. This kind of nonviolent movement is driving them insane, and this is, of course, one of the disputes I have with these Black Bloc anarchists, half of whom I think are probably agents provocateurs.
Mm-hmm.
Throwing bottles, lighting cars on fire, this is going to kill any kind of real opposition. It's going to make any kind of opposition movement atrophy. A good window into what we shouldn't be is the characterization that the power elite and their organs in the press make of us, how they describe us. At the same time, if you refuse to respond to legitimate demands, and these are certainly legitimate demands, eventually people get frustrated. If you physically eradicate nonviolent, peaceful encampments, and yet do nothing to ameliorate the conditions that push people into those protest movements, then eventually are going to get violence. I mean, history has shown that. I just don't want to see us go there. So I think it's a very precarious time in American society, and I think the fact that the corporate state is so utterly tone deaf and out of touch means that they're not going to respond rationally to what's happened to the working class and the poor and increasingly the middle class in this country, but essentially try and use their the heels of their boots to stomp this down. And that's really catastrophic in terms of consequences for us and for them.
Well, and we already have a situation before the NDAA was signed where there's very little accountability for, you know, individual law enforcement or individual military who commit atrocities or oppression. We know that the cities and states, government, they have slush funds just to pay people off. And so, you know, there's very little accountability. What do you see with the signing of the NDAA with accountability for crimes from the police state at all?
Well, I mean, if you're stripped of due process, you can't even raise the issue of injustice because you can't get into a courtroom. So, I mean, the whole the NDA was really designed to make it impossible for an ordinary citizen who is targeted by the state to have any kind of voice at all. Of course, this will be used first against Muslims and Muslim Americans, but we're next. I mean, I spend a lot of time in the Muslim community in this country, and the persecution is immense. Just anecdotally, you know, they're constantly stopped, for security checks at airports. They're harassed. Their mosques are visited. Their homes are visited. They're racially profiled. And I think, you know, we have demonized Muslims so effectively in this country that a lot of people are fooled into thinking that it's only going to be them, number one, and number two, they deserve it.
Right.
But I think the state understands that, once they have these kind of powers in their hand, they're free to use it against everybody, and they will.
Well, we just have time for one more question, Chris. But we see the signing statement said that the Obama administration is going to decline to use it against American citizens, but the signing of it opens the door for, you know, a President Romney or President Gingrich, an even more right-wing reactionary government that probably wouldn't even hesitate to use it.
Well, I don't think Obama would hesitate to use it either.
I don't either. I don't either.
But you're right. I mean, if they didn't want to target American citizens, then why didn't they adopt Feinstein's resolution and write that into the bill? They had that option, and they chose not to take it.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for coming on and talking about your lawsuit. Thank you for filing it. And where can my listeners get a hold of you and find out more information about this?
Oh, I don't have a website, but TruthDig is, you know, I write a column every Monday, so I'll certainly keep everyone updated on TruthDig.
Well, Chris Hedges, thank you so much for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox, and thank you for your work.
Thanks, Cindy.
What happened?
What's your name?
What's your name?
Wake up, what's your name?
Shit. If the ever was a time, it would be now, is all I'm saying.
That was Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox for today. As always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Scott Cuddy, my webmaster, Rich Bowser, my producer, Mikey, our guest today, Chris Hedges, and you for listening. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan.
Where are the you?
There's a time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Go right now, it's the party park. And News Corp says you don't have a plan. Well, sit down, man, I'll tell you again, the plan's to stand.
together up to greet. And a tear gas can in a veteran's face won't change the case.